Welcome to Advent 2016, this first Advent, the Sunday of hope. I'm finding it difficult to let that number sink in. 2016. Maybe it's because I'm approaching my 30th Christmas of preparing Advent sermons. Maybe I'm realizing I've become too complacent. Maybe I'm beginning to realize what getting old really feels like. Let me repeat myself. Maybe I'm beginning to realize what I do know, that this is not the first year. I've been amazed how 2,000 years have passed since the birth of Jesus and all of his teachings, and we, his followers, still struggle so profoundly with our faithfulness. Yes, some Christian communities dumb it down, providing lots of easy answers to simple questions that no one in the world is really asking. But we aren't one of those. We never have been. We never will be. Plus, I'm too pragmatic for a religion that borders on easy escapism or blind sentimentality. Maybe my problem at this critical time, in this particular moment of national and world history, is the sober comprehension of how daunting and difficult this task is. How it is just as hard today as it was yesterday and in yesteryears. As I've said, I've been at this for 30 years to discover, after all this work of crafting sermons and building relationships and trying to help others, well, how so many of those around me aren't feeling much hope or joy of moving into the future. How should you and I deal with the astonishing fact that more Americans understand Christianity as a religion of condemnation and of protecting the status quo than one of a life-giving faith of true and transforming hope? And these people aren't strangers. They are our neighbors. They are our children and our children's friends. All the while, I am charged this morning with providing a message of hope during a season of pressing anxiety and anticipatory worry. Look, no one knows what the future holds, least of all me. And I really think all predictions, if going by this past year is any indication, are about as reliable as all those fake news sites, whom I fear had more influence in our politics this election than perhaps the politicians themselves. But if we are experiencing a crisis as a faith community, perhaps it's time for us to wrestle more with the nature and fabric of our Christian hope. What does hope, time-tested, world-changing, Jesus-styled hope really look like? Let me begin by describing what hope is not. Christian hope is not the hope of the timid social progressives who may be content to seek modest and incremental change over time, ever careful not to move too fast or to sound too radical. Christian hope is not the hope of straight-line fiscal conservatives tempted to reduce all principles of morality and justice into an equation of economic prosperity, believing that whatever is best for the corporate bottom line is always, always what is best for all concerned. Christian hope is not a winner-take-all, might-makes-right philosophy, where winning is itself its own validation, sporting an arrogance that embraces raw power and the cult of celebrity as the rationale for all sorts of language and behavior, even the most objectionable. Might it be this message of American exceptionalism that we have most effectively taught our children? If you are very famous, very powerful, and very rich, you can do whatever you want without any consequences whatsoever. Christian hope occupies a narrow band between a God who is both just and merciful, with a people who are both responsible and compassionate, with a church willing to be both self-critical and courageous in self-sacrificial acts of love. And perhaps godly hope, heavenly hope, authentic hope, is only possible once we have exhausted all the other possibilities left to us. The prophetic imagination of Isaiah forecast a truly hopeful vision, a compelling and positive future we are still trying to realize. There will be some people who will flock to the mountain of God's wisdom to learn and to seek to follow God's holy path of courageous goodwill with the goal of mutual understanding and lasting reconciliation. The prospect of the coming of the Lord will motivate the faithful to lay down their weapons of conflict, division, and war in favor of what could only happen if people truly acted as God's partners in the hope of redemption. They all would become agents of peace. In a theology of hope, Jürgen Moltmann reminds us that faith may be what we have now, but hope is what we have for the future. And just as God is with us now, God is evermore before us, ahead of us, beckoning us into the dawn of a new creation. Our hope is a hoping against hope, as the Apostle Paul says. A vision of what is to be that appears so wildly ridiculous, it strains at the dimensions of hope itself. Or consider Matthew's gospel as we move from prophetic hope of Isaiah into the apocalyptic vision of Armageddon or last days. Matthew reminds us of a division within the human fellowship and femaleship. Two men will be working side by side, earning exactly the same wage, doing exactly the same job, from all outward appearances, completely and utterly identical. But one will hear God's call and be taken. The other, blind to any other option except the tired rut he has been digging his whole life, will be left behind. Two women of the same status and station in life will be at their task, barely managing each exhausting minute after another minute, hour after hour, day after day, for yet another day of finger-numbing and back-breaking labor. They look so much alike. You could never guess. One is on the verge of transformation, and the other will be conscripted to the rude awakening of every day, looking exactly like the one before. Now, I recognize this is a novel reading of Matthew's apocalyptic vision, but too many are passive in their faith, buying their time, waiting their turn, hoping for God to do something, when perhaps God already has. Matthew's distinction is one that pushes us to attentiveness, faithfulness, and endurance. Not to judge by the standard of outward appearances or the number of pages that were hit in popularity or how much wealth someone has or how much popularity they may have. When in fact, God is doing something miraculous and hopeful, happening on the inside, deep down in the lives and hearts of the faithful, living faithfully to a message of unconditional love, hugging the inside track, willing to stand in solidarity with the poor and the oppressed. Indeed, someone has pointed out that we must be living in the last days. For God has told us the arrival of the Son of Man from heaven will be heralded with trumpets. You heard me correctly. The signs of Jesus' return have been around us, all around us, for nearly 6 months. Trumpets everywhere. I saw the signs. You did too. Blue with white lettering. Trump Pence. Now that may be a cheap shot. Couldn't resist. But maybe the fundamentalist Christians are going to get their wish, who have been praying for Armageddon for decades. Listen to Bultmann. Those who hope in Christ can no longer put up with reality as it is, but must begin to suffer under it, to contradict it. Peace with God means conflict with the world, for the goat of the promised future stabs inexorably into the flesh of every unfulfilled present. You know, African American slaves sang freedom songs before freedom was proclaimed. Indigenous Americans continue to hold prayer vigils even after treaty after treaty by the federal government has been broken, even up until this very day, even when their very lives are in grave jeopardy. Civil rights workers continue to march and continue to march even after the arrest and the dogs and the fire hoses. Attentiveness, faithfulness, endurance. This is what I realized. I need Advent, particularly in 2016, because I need to be told the story again of how the blessing of God delights in a new baby's birth. Even with King Herod, this frightfully evil man with so much earthly power that he can successfully order the massacre of innocent children. And the hope of Christ is met by grieving mothers who cannot be comforted. I need Advent, particularly in this year, because I need to be told the story again of young Mary's eager faith, who receives the mystery of Christ within her very body as a blessing for the poor and as justice for the oppressed. And the hope of Christ is met by scandal as Mary is sent out into the country at the exact time it would be noticeable that she was unmarried and with a child. I need Advent, particularly this year, because I need to be told the story again of Joseph's willing submissiveness, who realizes that faithfulness to God will require an upheaval to his carefully managed reputation and agenda. And the hope of Christ is met by the possibility of slander and the spoiling of a good man's name. I need Advent, particularly this year, because I need to be told the story again of the Holy Family burdened by a government mandate to take the arduous 70-mile journey from Nazareth to Bethlehem, even with Mary in no condition to board a modern-day airplane. And the hope of Christ is met with hardship and challenge and perseverance. I need Advent, particularly this year. And I imagine you need it too. Advent tells us that way before Jesus performed his first miracle, or told his first parable, or preached his first sermon, or called his first disciples, or took his first walk with the poor and suffering, or was the first to die so that others might be brave enough to die to the old way and live eternally into new. Before all of this, Jesus entered the world tiny and powerless and needy and vulnerable. And his earthly status doesn't improve. It just gets worse until he is taken from this earth and returned to the Father's bosom. A story from the Holocaust makes a similar point. A Nazi guard was taunting his Jewish prisoner, who had been given the filthiest job you could imagine, cleaning the toilets. The guard was standing above him, looking down at him, and said, "Where is your Jewish God now?" The prisoner replied, "Right here with me in the muck." Now, the strange part of the story, of many parts of the strangeness of the story, is the very real possibility that both the Nazi guard and the Jewish prisoner were very sincere believers in God. Both had a picture of God that they gave their allegiance to. Yet one identified the presence of God with the powerful, and the other identified the presence of God with the powerless. May we be blessed with Advent hope, so that we can tell the difference.